is there too much pavement in LA?
Probably.
Yeah. Well, there's the really amazing study. It just came out.
Hi, this is Ina Harris.
And I'm Mark Raven.
Welcome to The Tie-In.
Hi, and welcome to The Tie-In. Today, we're speaking with Amanda Lee Smith, who's an artist, conservation and native plant influencer, IATSE scenic painter, and certified naturalist.
Hi, Amanda. Welcome to The Tie-In.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me.
We're excited you could join us. I know, you know, you are working, so this is going to be, you know, this is time-bound for sure. But just so people know a little bit more about you, can you tell us just how you got into the world of entertainment? How'd you start out? And then we can talk about what you're doing now.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, I've been working in entertainment for over 20 years at this point. I started in my education with theater, doing set design, and found my way to set painting. So that's really what I've done as my professional career since then. I moved to LA in 2008 for grad school at CalArts, and was in the theater program there. And so, yeah, I've worked in everything from theater to theme parks, and now working for the motion picture industry within IATSE.
Yeah. Yeah. So curious, you've spent a lot of time across theater, theme parks, film, and now you joined IATSE. How did this all come together for you? It seemed like then, you know, at the same time you joined IATSE, you also started a project called LA is Not a Desert, if I'm not mistaken, right? So yeah. What happened for you that year that made it all come together?
Yeah, well, since I had moved out west, I had always been I had become an avid hiker and camper. I think just something about the landscape out here. I moved from Florida, so it was very different, getting to know the arid west. And so that was a huge influence on me. But even though I had always been a hiker, I had never really taken the time to know much about the native flora and fauna of California, of my new home here. So what happened in 2022 is just, for like a lot of people during the pandemic, it kind of opened up some new opportunities for me with downtime that I had. I took a class called the UC CalNat class, which allows you to become a certified California naturalist. It's like a 9-week course. You learn all about your local ecologies. Mine was focused on urban ecology.
Okay.
Yeah. So that was just a huge inspiration for me. And I've always been doing the painting work, but I think really, in learning about how amazing our local ecosystems are, it really propelled me to think more about sustainability and other aspects of my life.
Right. So maybe just tell us a little bit, like just to dive right into it, about your project, LA is not a desert, and then we can tie it back to the other work.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think after, the name is supposed to be a little funny because it's really like, LA is a desert is the sort of thing you hear at a party. It's the sort of thing you might see in a comment section on the LA Times article about water use in Los Angeles. And so it's the kind of thing that gets thrown out there. And I was just really interested in why this is. Why do people think, you know, all of LA, I've even seen people call all of California a desert.
Wow.
Yeah. Which is quite a stretch.
Yeah. Yeah.
So where does this come from? And so the project was just a way, for me to continue learning and engaging with local activism and environmentalism, and but also able to working to share what I was learning through art and writing to kind of look at this kind of thing people say about LA. You know, where is it true? We do have deserts in East LA County. But anyways, we have a lot of biomes and microclimates, and LA is a very complex place. So there's a lot to really explore there. And that's what I'm doing through my project and the art I make for it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I will say, I've got your Instagram pulled up, and it is lovely and vibrant and a lot of fun stuff that you have on there. One of the things that I saw just right at the top, is there too much pavement in LA?
Probably.
Yeah. Well, there's the really amazing study. It just came out that finds that almost half of the pavement that's in LA just isn't probably necessary. It's
really?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, they took out roads and sidewalks, anything that was, of course, needed for us to be able to move around. So just, I think it's kind of goes hand in hand with the sustainability work. Like when you read studies like this, sometimes there's just, they find even a simple solution to start with, like moving all our parking spots. If they were all just angled, that would allow for, I think, somewhere around 1,600 acres of pavement to be able to be removed from Los Angeles, which is half the size of downtown. So just simple thing, like if we could just repaint all our parking lots and then have some sort of funding and incentive for property owners to convert the rest of that land into little mini parks, you would have a much greener city.
I spent quite a bit of time in April last year in LA, and I was staying in Eagle Rock, but I went for a hike, you know, in and around, and I was actually surprised at how green and lush and almost tropical it was. And then also then you go like a little bit over and it's just like clear cut, no trees, no greenery. It's like,
yeah. 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 And that's the dichotomy of Los Angeles for sure. Like there are large parts of the county that are lacking green space, lacking equal access to parks. So that's a part of the project too, is to talk about like environmental justice and, you know, where our green spaces exist still and where they're like direly needed within the city.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I looked at a few posts on your Instagram page and learned a lot about scrubland. I'm like, wow, this is cool. I had no idea. So
that's great. Yeah. You're LA based?
No, but I've been down there, you know, in and around that area for years and years and years. And I mean, I used to live in Pasadena. So, you know, we'd go hiking and, you know, and anyway, all to say, like, I was just like, oh, it just, anyway, so educational as well as fun and vibrant and whatnot. So very cool. Very cool.
How do you tie in, and just to jump, how do you tie in your work in film and painting with this initiative?
Yeah, well, it's definitely a challenge for sure. You know, I think there's been a lot of progress that's been going on in the film industries, but there's still more work to do. I think for me, it's just my grounding practice of being aware of the land that's around me, that even though I'm in the middle of a motion picture studio lot that has been changed with landscaping, like thinking about what was here and the plants that make this city still a thriving ecosystem. It can feel kind of unrelated to my paintwork, but I think it's what helps me continue to work in the sustainability committee within my local 79. And it's really just the driving factor of like, why do this work?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you talk about working in the paint department. So what does, you know, talking about nature and sustainability look like in the paint department?
Yeah, well, I think my coworkers have definitely learned a lot about native plants and animals too. Have to try to keep it to a minimum, you know. It is the topic of my most interest, but you know, I think that's kind of a jump that is something to work towards. I know within my sustainability committee, like I really want to do more hikes, like go out and learn plant ID. I think a lot of just what I've experienced so far in engaging with interlocal and interguild kind of efforts, you know, I mean, there are lots of big ticket items that make tons of sense to go after, like,
sure,
away from gas powered vehicles, you know, recycling, better recycling, food, taking food waste, and making sure that's put to use for people who need the food. But I really think coming back to a bit of environmental education and awareness could really motivate people to not just have this be kind of a compliance issue, something we are just like being told to do at our job, but through education, people would naturally want to make better decisions in their workplace if they knew what was all around them, you know, and as a place with nature in it, not just that, you know, that someplace you go on your vacation to the mountains or up to Big Bear or Mammoth, but that actually right here, we have plenty to still preserve and protect. So that's, it kind of ties in. And I think that just kind of starts with like, let's go on a hike. Hey, do you want to learn how to do some plant identification? Here are some really cool apps like iNaturalist or Merlin that can help you do bird calls by sound. Mm-hmm. They're really easy tools now that make it much easier to learn about the things we're hearing and seeing in our everyday lives. And I do think that would have an impact on sustainability.
And you mentioned earlier just a grounding and even just a feeling and awareness. And so, you know, from the experience of being out in nature and maybe playing around with some of these fun new apps too, is, you know, like that just is kind of like, you know, completes the sort of the person, the emotional experience, or, you know, could be spiritual, could be anything. And it just kind of adds kind of a richer, fuller life experience almost to, you know, for people.
Absolutely. Yes. And it can continue on the lot. I do bird watching on my breaks here. Awesome. Yeah. I watched a hummingbird. It was actually hunting insects the other day, a little lunch common area. And, you know, so I just mean it's just it's a practice. So the more you're kind of looking, you'll see more things, you know?
Right.
So even finding moments when you're working a 12-hour day, it's very difficult, of course. You know, right now I don't have time to just go on a hike after work, but sure. Finding moments in the outdoor spaces within our lots, you know, can still be like a point of connection to other living things in our city.
Yeah. And speaking of living things, how about on movie sets? I mean, obviously we have this idea of LA from, you know, decades and decades of being in front of the camera. How is the film industry portraying nature on film sets, and how do you envision that changing, especially with what we currently think of as LA, right? It's kind of the concrete jungle.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. You kind of get those, like, you know, the more the LA you were talking about, where it's just like the shots of just the concrete, often like the most concrete parts of the LA River, you know, the Sixth Street Bridge being a really famous location, both prior and its new modern version. I think I really like exploring. I think in science fiction, you see it the most, you know, classic shows like Star Trek, using our chaparral, which is the plant family that fills most of our hills here in LA, is all over Star Trek. I mean, anytime they go to an alien planet, I mean, it's convenient. It's what's here, but it's all, they'll make their taste on some scrubby hillside of Griffith Park. And, but why is a treeless landscape seen as the alien place, you know? And so that's something I also enjoy exploring and hope that in the future, just like there are initiatives for like WGA writers to write in recycling practices, mm-hmm. or to not be using plastic, like we can make these practices familiar through the media we're creating. And I think in the same way of a familiarity with what a natural California or Los Angeles landscape looks like would be a really great goal. And maybe something for the writers and directors to kind of talk about as well. And even initiatives I've heard too of, you know, what plants are greensmen using when they're making something that's based in LA. You know, often we get kind of that like subtropical birds of paradise kind of flora coming in. But so there's just a real opportunity, I think, to make, you know, why not a white sage plant? You know, why not a native sunflower? The more people see these plants and become familiar with them, then that's when you form a relationship with them and would want to practice your life at work in a way that reflects the things you love, like outside of work.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's not like this tension between the two.
I'm trying to, you know, think about the intersection of art and science and advocacy. How do you think about that when you're maybe, you know, talking to folks on set or talking to people in your, advocacy work or other naturalists or scientists?
Well, I think the good thing is, like, the native plant enthusiast community within Los Angeles is a very mixed group of people.
Okay.
I mean, it does run side by side with, you know, there are lots of entertainment professionals that kind of have had their I'm done with the industry moments, and they've opened up native plant nurseries, you know.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I think several of the smaller nurseries in town are people who were working in the film industry prior. So I think there's this kind of great camaraderie there, you know. I mean, it is difficult to see and work with the amount of kind of trash that's produced, you know, each day at our job site. And, you know, the work is long term. You know, there's only so much you can really do in the day to day, especially as, you know, I'm not even the head of my department. I am literally just a brush on the job. I come and, you know, there's room to talk about things with people. But I think it's more in having these conversations, but also having the interlocal interguild is where the work is slowly progressing, because it takes all the departments working together. You know, often even with, so like one of the easiest things we could be doing on our lots within the paint departments is using paint care program.
Right.
Yeah. So, which I don't know, maybe you had a point on this later in your questions, but you know, the problem right now is it's just not really set up as a vendor for our lots. And then if you're here on a show, you really only have so much control with changing the larger ecosystem of how things are disposed of, you know, because we're working within the studio's practices and like processes for removing paint. And then even getting vendors is often an interlocal, you know, maybe someone in 44 is actually Hoover, like the prop makers, is actually setting up our disposal vendors for the paint department too, because we're so kind of tied in with each other in those departments. So I really think that this is just the, like, this is like our changing from oil fuels. Like, this is just the thing we really need to do, is just utilize and the paint care program more. And I don't know, I can kind of, I have a whole thing about how, you know, that.
Yeah. So just to be clear, the paint care program is a free paint recycling program. Is that right?
That's right. Yes. So paint care started in 2009 in some states. It's a program that is in 13 states in the U.S. right now. And it was started as through the paint manufacturing companies, a program that there's a fee when you purchase any new paint. You know, it's like a 30 cents to like a dollar extra fee. And that allows for you to return any unused paint to drop off sites for free. And that paint, the most important thing and the thing that is the most different from how we process our trash paint right now is that it has to be kept in its original container. You can't just dump all your old paint together, like in a big bin or a big 5-gallon bucket, and have that be hauled away. So, yeah, it's really great. I mean, just homeowners in general should really be aware of it. If you have any projects, making sure as much as you can, just keep the paints in their original container, and you can drop them off for free at a paint care site. But what that would kind of look like on the lots would involve, this is the bigger picture of getting the larger ecosystem to change, is really having a place to store the paint in its gallons in the meantime, because each individual show doesn't really have space on their soundstage to additionally kind of keep a pile of paint around until it can be taken to the paint care drop-off site. So, yeah,
Yeah, there's definitely some infrastructure changes that need to happen.
What I just love is how, like, all of this interesting sustainability stuff can come together on a film set. Because you hear a lot about certain things, like you had mentioned earlier, like, you know, getting off, gas and diesel, you know, reducing fuel consumption in various ways. But, like, you know, this just goes to show, like, even, you know, you are noticing, you know, stuff within your department and, you know, even free programs and, you know, what that infrastructure change could look like. And there's all, you know, it's really neat. And of course, you have to then collaborate with other departments. And, you know, it's just, it's such an interesting, fascinating dynamic workspace, and there's all of these interesting things that can be done differently. And it's neat to hear you talk about the paint department's view on this. So.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I think hopefully, you know, we'll be able to move forward with getting some sort of paint care drop-off site, you know, on the main lots. I think would be a really great, easy first step to do. It just kind of takes getting that message kind of up the ladder a little bit, like, to get some action going.
So that would be, who would be the ideal person? Like, if you were speaking to them right now, who would be the ideal person you'd want to hear or you'd want to talk to about that on the lot?
Yeah, I mean, we have our paint maintenance shops on each lot.
Okay.
Actually, but they're also 729 painters. So definitely we're in the process right now of, like, we had the paint care rep come talk to us in December at our union meeting. And so next step is just getting kind of a more focused conversation happening with all of the leads for the maintenance shops to kind of figure out how that could happen. But, you know, definitely facilities and somebody who could kind of figure out where the cans of paint are kind of stored in the meantime, you know, because that's just it's a little cumbersome when you can kind of dump all your paint into a 50-gallon drum. That's a easier thing to just stash somewhere and have that be, you know, it's disposed of properly. It's just that there's only so much you can do with paint that's been mixed together. You know, it also has maybe Windex in it and just a bunch of water. So it's kind of a degraded material at that point. And it certainly is being disposed of in the right way. Latex paint is a hazardous material within the state of California. So it has to be hauled away in a particular way. But when you keep it in its original container, paint care is using that to recycle into new products. They also are connecting with Habitat for Humanity. And so if the paint you're donating is actually just fine, it doesn't even need to be processed, they're kind of being the in-between to make sure that that paint just gets to Habitat for Humanity projects or being able to be sold in the ReStore stores without even having to go through a whole recycling process. So, you know, which is ultimately the best thing energy use wise. So they're just a really great program that I have found people maybe just aren't aware of. But it is, again, completely free. They will even come pick up from a job site. If you have 100 gallon containers, they will come pick that up for free. And so that's where it kind of turns into, like, if we collected those on sound stages, you know, I mean, we definitely would be able to utilize even a free pickup.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. I have a question, though, just to bring it about painting to your initiative.
Yeah.
And it's, are you actually painting plants? Are you painting, like, doing paintings and bringing them, selling them, or doing any sort of, like, art activations within the naturalist efforts?
Yeah. Well, I brought some of my pieces, too. I could show one real quick if you want to. So.
Oh, my gosh. Nice.
Perfect.
This is one of the first pieces I made. We'll have to see how it shows here.
Oh, cool.
So for the audio portion of this, this is a depiction of the LA River and the Glendale Narrows, which some people might not know. This is a stretch of the river that could never be fully filled with concrete. The bottom is a soft bottom. which has allowed for more plant growth and as well as just a more vibrant habitat. This would be kind of, it's everywhere from the 134 through Los Feliz, kind of just below Dodger Stadium and Elysian Park. That is, I believe it's an 8-mile stretch of the river that doesn't have concrete on the floor. And that's just because the water table was so high. So it literally never could be fully channelized the way the rest of the LA River is. And so, yeah. I've depicted the Hyperion Bridge, and I try to incorporate the activities, people using the river for fishing or bird watching, and you really get a sense that all of the people and the plants and the animals are all like part of a cohesive system.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, this is kind of how I'm trying to use art to communicate how nature is integrated into our city. Even when people might not really think of LA as like a nature city, there really is just so much here. I use native plants. I try to mostly depict native plants in the pieces I do. And I work in everything from, this was originally actually a 6-foot paper cut that I did. So it's big, big sized piece of artwork. And then I took it and redrew it to make the digital art print versions. That I sew, and that's really something I'll go back and forth between doing lino cuts. Sometimes I scan it and keep working digitally. So being able to go back and forth between mediums is how I work, but really just inspired by all of that, like stencils and paper cut, lino cut, art styles.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Love it.
I know. That's so cool.
I can almost envision a community of naturalist artists and painters putting all their work together and showcasing that and bringing awareness. I mean, I'm assuming you're doing something like that.
Well, yes, there's going to be the California Botanic Garden is having a native plant fest at the end of March. That'll be March 28th. That's out in Claremont. And so that's a really great event. And maybe you are a person who like, I don't really know about native plants. Please go to this garden in general. The whole garden is California native plants. They have it set up by region. So they even have like a little redwood section and, some like Monterey pine or, they really, really get the whole state in. So it's a great learning experience anytime, but the Native Plant Fest will be a really fun event as well. And I would also, even though it's a bit farther off in the future, there will also be the Frogtown Art Walk that will happen in the fall sometime. It happens every 2 years. And that's just a really great local community event, but it's on the river. So if you just haven't really ever spent time in the Glendale Narrows and really paid attention to the LA River beyond just like driving by it on the 5, that's a really great opportunity to come and really see an event that celebrates the Los Angeles River.
Yeah, totally. Good things to do. If you're new to LA, you want to get to know the area and the, flora and fauna and local ecosystems. Very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Amanda, yeah. I am just amazed at all your work and all the things you're into and how you're like, in there in the paint department, making it happen and thinking about these sustainability elements too.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much. Yeah, it's really been quite a journey the past few years, and it's always fun when I, now I've kind of built myself a whole job that I do when I'm not working.
Yeah, exactly.
And now I'm grateful to be back on a production job and still figuring out how to do the ecological education and art work as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. So how can people find out about LA is Not a Desert?
Great. Yeah. People can find me on Instagram at LA is Not a Desert. And I also have a website. The website is losangelesisnotadesert.com.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, and there's a way, I think I have a newsletter I started now, a digital newsletter. So you can sign up on the website for that. And that's how I'll kind of share more about the events and community activations and stuff like that I'm doing.
Excellent. Excellent. And can people buy your art through the website as well?
Yes, I do have a store on the website. There's just a little link in the drop-down menu.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect. Amanda,
All right.
Thank you
Yeah.
so much.
Keep
thank
up the good
you.
Work.
Thank you so much. Yeah, thank you.
Gush about the culture here in Los Angeles. So,
oh my gosh, it's totally great. You've brought us a new perspective to pay attention to when we're there.
Absolutely. Yeah. And like I said, I think I mentioned at the beginning, but if I could just recommend one other way for people to get involved, I really recommend the CalNat class that I took. Should have gotten the website full name, but I know if you just search UC CalNat, that comes up. And that is, again, the class I took. You can take it pretty much most places in California. The UC system partners with local organizations. So I took mine through the Arboretum, but Santa Monica Mountain Recreation Area has a class. Bolsa Chica, which is a wetlands right at the border of Orange County, has a version of the class. Really, there are so many options within LA, but even if you're in a different part of California, that's also another great way to just really deep dive into some of the stuff I'm talking about and just really get to be inspired by all of the life that's around you, even in the middle of a giant mega city like Los Angeles, that is often easy to kind of oversee the wildlife and plants that are, you know, around you every day. So,
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank Great. You very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Peter Chapman. Social media is by Sharon Ewan. Our editor and producer is Rachel Werbel.